Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. In addition to the newly produced material offered on the website and here on PCJ Media, we also feature some old vintage reports and features from the pre-Switzerland in Sound days. The information they contain may no longer be valid or up to date, but we present this material as a sound document for your listening pleasure.
It's a very old knowledge about how life evolves. It comes from the Vedas, most ancient record of most sublime human experience, the Veda. I think this part of Switzerland, central Switzerland, the Salzburg, is the most creative part of central Europe. And that was the reason we established the international capital of the Age of Enlightenment here in Salzburg. Deeper rest to body and mind, and that which revitalizes the system is good for all the people. So all are enjoying the benefits of TM.
Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, the founder of the world government of the Age of Enlightenment, with its international capital at Salzburg in central Switzerland. The full meaning of his message will become evident later in the program. We have to start first with something which most people have at least heard of, but many know little about, Transcendental Meditation, or TM for short. Meditation of different kinds, stemming from or associated with the practice of yoga, is deeply rooted in Oriental culture and tradition. In the 1960s, the world started to hear about Transcendental Meditation, popularized by a number of celebrities, including the Beatles. It was Maharishi Mahesh Yogi who developed this system of allowing the individual practitioner to bring out his most highly refined state of consciousness or awareness, while at the same time rejuvenating the body. TM is neither a religion nor a cult, nor a system of physical culture. It's simply a method of spiritual improvement, to put it most simply. Learning Transcendental Meditation costs the average of a week's net income, with no further financial outlay after that. The actual meditation is simple and takes about 20 minutes in the morning and evening, sitting in some peaceful spot. At Salzburg, a team of scientists has been brought together to conduct extensive research into exactly how TM achieves the elevated state of awareness and physical rejuvenation. Maharishi has insisted that the scientific basis of TM be established so that it can be fully explained and proved to the most skeptical of people. Dr. Lawrence Domasch is a professor of physics at the Maharishi European Research University, MERU, which is also headquartered at Salzburg. He explains from a scientific point of view what Transcendental Meditation does and how it works.
In physics, if we want to get to the simplest aspect of a system, one thing that we would do is reduce the temperature of the system. If we have a physical system, there's a great law of thermodynamics that says that when the temperature goes down, the entropy goes down. The entropy is the technical name for the disorder in a system. So at very low temperature, especially near the absolute zero of temperature, we would come to a level for a physical system, a fluid or a crystal, where the entropy is nearly zero and the orderliness is nearly perfect. Now, this is a definition of Transcendental Meditation. What we do in the TM technique, it's a technology for reducing what we might call the mental temperature. And it's a very simple thing. It's very simple and easy to learn. It depends on the mechanics of the thinking process, not the content or what we think about or what philosophy we have, nothing like that. The technique depends on the actual mechanics of the thinking process. One sits down and is taught to do a little sort of procedure which de-excites the thinking process. As we lower what we might call the mental temperature, there is a phase transition to a very highly ordered state of consciousness. And this is very reminiscent of what a physicist might call a ground state of consciousness. This is the basic state of consciousness. This is the key and the source of human consciousness. And as we experience it, the physiology follows along with our subjective mental experience. The physiology settles down and goes into a really extraordinary state. When physiologists first studied what happens during the TM technique, which was in the late 1960s, they found some truly unique phenomena. The oxygen consumption goes way down. The person who's doing this practice falls into an extraordinarily deep state of rest. In fact, if we measure the resting state of the body by oxygen consumption, which measures metabolic rate, during deep sleep, that decreases about 12% from the waking level. During TM, in beginners, decreases about 16% on the average, and in advanced subjects, sometimes much more. So here we have a state in terms of restfulness of the body is deeper than deep sleep. And yet in terms of subjective experience, it's completely the opposite of deep sleep. The consciousness is wide awake. Subjectively, the person would say that he was, even if we can imagine, more wide awake inside than he is in the ordinary waking active state. And it's, I think, absolutely fine for someone to achieve all this by any direction which he is able to achieve it. But as a practical matter, I think the fact is that at this particular time, there isn't very much available that's real and practical outside of Maharishi.
Professor Lawrence Domash. Dr. Byron Rigby is a psychiatrist, also connected with the Maharishi European Research University. He says that there is no scientific doubt that transcendental meditation has many benefits to both physical and mental health.
When any doctor or medical person looks at the nature of the body, it becomes very clear that the whole of the body is designed to function perfectly. That when we say there is a disorder present, that really is a disorder, something not natural. What we see with transcendental meditation is that the state of very deep rest and alert clarity of consciousness that occurs during transcendental meditation allows the built-in self-repair mechanisms at every level of the body to operate. That means at the molecular level, at the cellular level, in the tissues and organs, and in the body as a whole. And the result of this is that mechanisms of repair which normally can't come into operation because the body is active can begin to function and lead the whole system back to a situation of what we could only call perfect health. In principle, this means a situation in which illness is virtually impossible for that person and in which the process of aging is suspended. So we can make very extreme statements, really, about the degree of health possible for the individual as a result of transcendental meditation.
Of course, I don't imagine you're claiming infinite life, though.
Well, we can certainly expect that the potential lifespan of a man, whether measured either in the duration of his life or in the amount that he accomplishes in his life, We can imagine these being extended very, very considerably beyond what is ordinarily expected.
Is there any indication, Dr. Rigby, of whether or not transcendental meditation techniques could have any beneficial effect on mental patients?
Oh, yes. There are many studies throughout the world where transcendental meditation has been used in psychiatric practice, and the results have been rather what you'd expect. Actually, if you look at the practice of TM and see what happens to average individuals when they meditate, they move in a direction which is opposite to the direction that's found in the case of disturbance. It's as if coming into more able to act in accord with natural law, with the needs of the surroundings, they are doing the exact opposite that an individual does if he comes into disharmony with his surroundings. And in fact, this is something we notice in everyday life. There are many individuals who we say might seem at first sight to be equally healthy, yet one man can completely manage a whole nation, the other man can just about get his breakfast together. So we recognize this great disparity in ability to create order, even within so-called normal people. So it's really the spectrum from illness to health, taken several steps further, is the state of perfect health.
TM researcher and psychiatrist Dr. Byron Rigby. One of the most extraordinary claims made for transcendental meditation is the so-called Maharishi effect. It is believed that as the number of TM practitioners approaches 1% of a given population, there is a beneficial spillover to the rest of the population. Among other things, it's claimed that this Maharishi effect lowers a community's illness and accident rate. Crime is said to go down, and political conditions and social quality improve. How did they come to this finding? Here's Mero researcher and student Stephen Giles.
It came up when someone was looking at the statistics of crime in cities where 1% of the population was meditating. And now we've found with many hundreds of cities the same thing. When the population, a certain percentage of the population is practicing TM, crime rate goes down, accidents go down, hospital admissions decrease. It's a very amazing effect we're finding.
How many cases, as a matter of fact, have been analyzed and over what period of time?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the analysis now is of about 300 cities. And what we found is that the influence of the Maharishi effect increases exactly as the number of people practicing TM increases.
Now, there are a number of different kinds of positive thinkers in the world. Some of them are just positively disposed to life without doing any formal meditation. Other people practice yoga, which is also beneficial in addition mm-hmm. to TM. How can you be sure that we're dealing with a phenomenon mm-hmm. only caused by TM itself?
The thing is, we don't deny the positive influence being created by all kinds of activities. But what we find is it's very startling when we suddenly see an increase in people practicing TM, maybe increases a few thousand in the city, and then immediately we begin to see improvements in these crime and hospital admissions and so on. So TM is certainly one factor. In fact, how we account for these changes is that that influence of ordinance from people practicing transcendental meditation supports the efforts of other people, supports the efforts of the police or the efforts of doctors to prevent illness and so on. What we find is that the efforts of everyone begin to work together to create an ideal society, which is the aim of teaching transcendental meditation.
Stephen Giles. But it doesn't stop there. We now confront another striking claim, the extended Maharishi effect. The theory is that the spillover effect carries on to infect, as it were, even neighboring countries. The result, says Meru physics professor Jeffrey Clements, is an improvement in world politics.
There have been, for example, instances of a decrease in tension between the East and West, of a warming up of relationships between China and Europe, between China and North America. And this would indicate that at least the extended Maharishi effect can get as far as China.
Can it be proven that the Maharishi effect was directly responsible?
Well, in some ways I think it can. This project was called the Great Wall of China project. And the idea was not to construct a large wall around China, but to air condition the wall. So that the effects generated by the meditators on the periphery would actually extend into China. Now, at the time, Maharishi said that initially, one would expect to see some influence of this project within the first 6 months. And I think, actually, in almost exactly 6 months' time, we began to see some indications, I think, first of all, of a warming up of relationships between China and Canada.
And what about the case of the Middle East? I believe here, another case in point, Israel, which has a substantial number of meditators. Mm. It is said by Maharishi that the visit, certainly historic visit on the part of Mr. Sadat to Jerusalem, was directly due to the Maharishi effect. Is this also so?
This would also seem to be a case where the events that have taken place would really confirm what Maharishi has said. The number of meditators within Israel has become very much greater. It's now almost 1%, about 0.7%, including quite a large contingent from the armed forces within Israel. And over this period of time, we've seen, again, a progressive growing of the strength of Israel, of its strength within that situation, culminating in this event that the president of Egypt would come to Israel and offer to have peace talks.
The extended Maharishi effect brings us to the world government of the Age of Enlightenment. This is what we might call a master plan to achieve world order through transcendental meditation and the Maharishi effect. Assuming that more and more world orderliness will follow an increasing number of meditators, Maharishi created the World Government Infrastructure in January 1975. Its aim? Invincibility for every nation. This seemingly sinister plan is brought into focus by the world government's Minister of Cultural Integrity, Invincibility, and World Harmony, V.C. Crichton.
As Dr. Jeffrey Clements was mentioning, there are substantial indications that world consciousness is rising. The world seems to be becoming a more orderly, harmonious, integrated place to live in, very, very slowly, but very definitely. So, once Maharishi started to see these trends taking place, he felt the need for a global organization to supervise the rise of world consciousness and then to maintain a high level of world consciousness. And for this reason, it was only logical to create a world government for the Age of Enlightenment. And the sole purpose of the world government is to maintain high consciousness in the world, and its sovereignty is simply the domain of consciousness. Its purpose is to help every other government achieve their goals by making the quality of consciousness in their country more enriched. The whole focus of our activity now is to bring invincibility to every nation. And it's again very simple. It's just through the enrichment of individual and collective consciousness. It's a disgruntled, grumpy person who has the most enemies, and it's a friendly, integrated person who has the most friends. And it's the same with nations. It's exactly the same. A strong, friendly, harmonious nation will be a nation that doesn't have enemies.
Some of what we've heard so far about transcendental meditation may seem pretty far out for the more skeptical of us. But we haven't finished yet. In 1975, Maharishi inaugurated a very special course for experienced meditators called the SIDDHI program, spelled S-I-D-D-H-I. It aims at elevating the accomplished meditator to still greater heights, quite literally, because one of the indicators of success in the SIDDHI program is the student's ability to levitate and perform other supernormal feats like mind reading, clairvoyance, and even invisibility. Laura Fulton holds the rank of governor in the world government, and she's levitated many times.
What happens is the person who is going to practice the technique meditates or settles down to a very silent state of awareness. We call this unbounded awareness. It's a very simple state of awareness, in fact, the most simple state. And then they begin to practice the technique, and what they find is that they're able to project an impulse of thought, project a thought from that very, very subtle state of awareness, that state of unbounded awareness. And being able to function from that level, they find that the mind-body coordination is perfectly intimate, which means that if they have the faint intention to rise up off the ground, to lift up off the ground, the body immediately cooperates by lifting up off the ground. There's not any concentration involved or any sort of thinking yourself into something. What happens is the person lifts up off the ground, goes forward a little way in the air, and then comes down again. They don't remain up normally in the first early stages of learning to fly or learning to levitate. You don't remain up for a long period of time. You go up a little way forward and then come down. And this has been called, we call this a hop. And so people have been known to cover a distance of, say, 300 or 400 feet in, say, a matter of 20 minutes of a series of these hops. The second stage that Maharishi's defined actually is a stage where the body will hover in the air. In fact, there have been breakthroughs in this area, but we want to be very careful that, for example, the reason we haven't had public press interviews, public press demonstrations of flying or levitation is that during the early stages of the practice, it's a very delicate thing. And sometimes the body will go up and stay there for a while, and sometimes it won't for so long. And while the people are just learning and practicing, we don't want to have them have that public exposure. We want to just have them learn in a protected environment. And then, when that stage has been stabilized, when they can actually remain in the air for a length of time, over a standard number of people, then we'll be able to.
Obviously, if the press is invited to witness things like levitation and invisibility, I suppose even the hardest core skeptic will be converted to transcendental meditation. Unfortunately, I personally was only able to see still photographs of flying, as they call levitation. The world headquarters of Transcendental Meditation is located here in Switzerland. But what about the Swiss themselves? Swiss TM organizer Urs Strobel told me that there are about 7,000 meditators in this country, mainly concentrated in the large towns. As far as reaching the magic 1% of the population meditating is concerned, there's still a ways to go. The present percentage is 0.1. Transcendental Meditation came to Switzerland relatively late, that is in 1970. I asked Urs Strobel for an explanation for the apparent Swiss reluctance to take up TM.
Swiss people, for some reason, are a little bit more conservative. They're very nice. The lectures you give in Switzerland, the people react always very, very friendly. They always think it's a good thing, but it's not necessary for me. That's what the reaction very many times is. But right now also, we have more and more also physicians which sending the people now to TM, and many doctors which just recommending it. Out of the literature, all the scientific literature which is publishing in all the scientific magazines, has some effect. And if they're not contacting the center directly, they just say the patients contact the TM center.
Do you think that Switzerland will ever reach in the foreseeable future that magic 1% of the population meditating?
Oh, I'm very sure that we will reach it very quick. Because the growth is not a straight line, it is a curve. It's a curve which is going very strongly upwards.
Logarithmically.
Yeah. Logarithmically, yeah. Natural logarithmic. And therefore, we are very, very optimistic that very quick, 1% or even more people are meditating.
Swiss transcendental meditator Urs Strobel. For the time being, the undisputed spiritual guide and motivator in transcendental meditation is its founder, Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. But what happens to the TM movement, the world government of the Age of Enlightenment, and invincibility for every nation after he physically leaves the scene? His answer to my question will be the last words of this program after I take this moment to thank you for listening.
When I physically leave the scene, the same thing will happen as happens to the mind when it transcends boundaries, becomes unbounded. The success of transcendental meditation movement has enriched the breadth of time, and this enrichment is strengthened day by day by about 2 million people practicing transcendental meditation in the world, and therefore it's going to be a continuum. A man here and there does not matter in this whole context of the worldwide betterment.
If you want more information about Switzerland and Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandandsound.com.